This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. The monarch butterfly is one of the most recognizable species in North America, and it's in trouble. Habitat loss and fragmentation has occurred throughout the monarch's range. Pesticide use can destroy the milkweed monarchs need to survive. The changing climate has intensified weather events which may impact the monarch's populations. Numbers of monarchs have decreased significantly over the last two decades, but San Antonio has pledged to be an oasis for the monarchs. And coming up this weekend, there is the Monarch Butterfly and Pollinator Festival. Are you concerned about the monarch butterfly population and the population of other butterflies and pollinators? What are you willing to do to help? How do you think the EPA should be doing to help the pollinators? And what is your favorite butterfly memory? I'd love to hear that. Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. And you can also email with your questions and comments to thesource at tpr.org. Tweet at us at tprsource. We're joined this hour with Monica Makel. She's the founder and director of the Monarch Butterfly and Pollinator Festival. She also runs the Texas Butterfly Ranch website. Monica, welcome back to The Source. It's great
Thank
to have you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Julia Murphy's here, Deputy Chief Sustainability Officer for the City of San Antonio Office of Sustainability. Julia, hi.
Hi.
It's great to have you here.
Thank you.
And on the line, we have Rebecca Quiñones-Piñon, is the Forest Ecologist and Monarch Outreach Coordinator for the National Wildlife Federation. Rebecca, welcome to The Source.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me, David.
All right. And let's find out more about San Antonio, how we're an oasis for the monarch butterflies. We're in an important location for them. Monica, tell me more about that.
Well, San Antonio sits in the heart of the Texas Funnel, which is the migratory pollinator corridor through which all monarch butterflies and other insects and wildlife must pass on their route back and forth from the north to the south. And because of our location here, all the monarch butterflies east of the Rocky Mountains that migrate funnel through this part of the world this time of year. So peak monarch migration season is upon us. It's typically October 10th to the 22nd. People are arguing that maybe we should move that a little bit later. The monarchs are moving much slower because we're not getting cold weather that's pushing them down, and the cold weather is what's pushing them down toward Mexico ultimately.
So I never understood this. Monarchs, how long does a monarch butterfly live?
Typically, they only live a couple of weeks, but the way the migration works is the butterflies start in Michoacan in the spring, usually late February, March. The butterflies that are migrating south right now and typically arrive there by Day of the Dead, they overwinter in the Mexican mountains at around 10,000 feet, and the reason they pick this one small patch of forest, which Rebecca can speak to because she studied that area quite thoroughly, is because of the temperature and the ecosystem is perfect for them. It's not freezing. You know, it's kind of like the Three Bears. It's just right, the temperature and everything there. So then in the spring, when it starts to warm up, they get the cues from the sun and they wake up from their diapause, which is their temporary hibernative state, and they reproduce. They have a big, huge butterfly party and mate, and the females start migrating north, and oftentimes very typically, they lay their first eggs of the season in Texas and northern Mexico. So in the springtime, we like to have milkweed, which is their host plant, available for them, and they can lay their eggs on that. Those butterflies lay their eggs in Texas. Those butterflies die, and about a month later, those eggs hatch, and that generation then starts the journey north. And over the summer, these multiple generations move north toward Canada until the equinox in September, you know, when we have 12 and 12 hours of it's the solstice, when we have the really long days and the days start to get shorter, then they get the cue from the sun, they need to head south. So those butterflies that we're seeing now are butterflies that are third, maybe fourth generation butterflies of the parents that left Mexico in the spring. And that's one of the things that's so magical about the migration, is these butterflies move back to Mexico somehow magically knowing how to find their way there, and they've never been to this one patch of forest, and yet they end up there every year.
So it's a multi-generational migration. But there's also the caterpillar stage of this going on. How long? So they lay the eggs, caterpillars come out. How long? What about
that
part of it?
Typically about 4 days as an egg, and then maybe a week to 10 days as a caterpillar. It depends on the humidity and the temperature. And then they turn into the beautiful jade green chrysalis with gold flecks on it, and that can be about a week or 10 days. And again, it depends entirely on the temperature and the conditions. And then by the time they hatch and become a butterfly, it's been about a month, the whole cycle.
And in San Antonio, is it one time a year or twice a year do we have the mass migration through here?
In the spring when they start moving north, it's not a concentrated flow of butterflies like it is in the fall, because in the fall they're all, first of all, the numbers are higher because they've been breeding all summer and there's millions and millions of butterflies and not all of them make it. Frankly, the migration is a very difficult undertaking for a butterfly, and only the most fit butterflies make it to Mexico. But in the spring, it's more of a, I like to call it a dribble. You know, we see them in ones and twos. You start to see monarch butterflies. But in the fall, we often get these big pulses, and they roost in the evenings. And so we're already starting to hear reports of roosts. There was a roost in Cisco, Texas this week. It's one of the first roosts in the state. And I had people texting me, the monarchs are here. And so when the cold front starts pushing them, that's when we start to see them, because they're trying to get away from that cold. They don't generally fly if it's unless it's 60 degrees or higher.
Rebecca Quinones-Pignon with the National Wildlife Federation. What does the status look like, the health of the population today of the monarchs?
Well, last year we saw an increase in the monarch population. The way we normally check the size of the population is when they are overwintering in South Central Mexico. And there is a way to measure the size of the population by the size of the area that they occupy in the overwintering grounds. So as Monica was saying, there was a huge concern a few years ago in 2014 when the monarch population was measuring in less than 1 hectare. In the overwintering grounds. And last year, we saw this beautiful increase to 6 hectares, which everyone celebrated. So we consider that there are different reasons why we saw this increase in the population. However, there's still a lot of work to do. And the monarch butterfly is still under assessment from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service through the species status assessment. We are waiting for a result or if the monarch is going to be listed as an endangered species or not. And we will hear back from U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service at the end of next year. So we saw some recovery on the size of the population. We are celebrating that recovery, but still we know that there is still a lot of work to do to make sure that the population becomes steady.
We're talking about the monarch butterfly, and as San Antonio is a monarch champion city, what does that mean? How did we achieve that status? The city of San Antonio has agreed to committed to taking certain steps. We're going to find out what those steps are and how are we doing with that commitment, and do you support that? Do you want San Antonio to be seen as a monarch champion city? You want San Antonio to be an oasis for the butterflies? What are you then willing to do in your own backyard to help the monarchs survive? You can give us a call, 210-614-8980. Also, I'd love to hear your monarch memories. If you've ever had one of those magical moments when you're outside and suddenly everywhere you look is monarchs, it's an incredible experience. 210-614-8980. The source continues when we come back. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. We're talking about San Antonio being a monarch champion city. Of course, we know we're a Spurs champion city, but we're also a monarch champion city. What does that mean? What did we sign up for when we said, yes, this is what we're all about? And it was Mayor Ivy Taylor that made that commitment. And let me go to Julia Murphy. She is the Deputy Chief Sustainability Officer for the City of San Antonio's Office of Sustainability. What does that mean? What did we agree to?
Sure. Well, we were one of the first cities in the nation to be declared a monarch champion city, which committed us to doing a number of things around habitat restoration, education in the general public, and also looking at policy considerations that would have impact on native species, including the monarch butterfly. And so we've been kind of building on this already. We already had a pretty strong conservation ethic in the city of San Antonio. So a lot of native habitat has been either restored or enhanced in all of our city parks all over town, which is great. And then there's always, you can look on the San Antonio Parks and Recreation website to find any number of education opportunities for the general public, for school children, et cetera. But I also wanted to shout out, give a shout out to the Alamo Area Monarch Collaborative, which includes the city, but is also this collaborative effort by a number of organizations, individuals, and agencies who have come together under this common set of goals and have really enhanced and amplified the work under this commitment. So that includes the River Authority, the San Antonio Water System, the zoo, area nature centers around the region, et cetera.
But you make it sound so simple that, oh, the city of San Antonio, you know, but we were the first to do all the sign on to all of these commitments. So I imagine there's a lot more to, I mean, are we agreeing to a certain amount of milkweed that's going to be planted in San Antonio? What, how is all that helping the butterflies?
And I should mention also, it helps the monarch, but it also helps so much more in our city, other beneficial insects that we need, as well as just quality of life in our city. So the commitments are to enhance habitat, as I said. So on the lands that we have control over, we have taken that on. There have been 5 pollinator gardens added to the natural parks in 2019, adding to what was already there. And those are in Friedrich Wilderness Park, Eisenhower Park, and the Phil Hardberger Park. And then there's a bunch of stuff going on around the Linear Creekway Trail System. So as these new, as the trail system gets built out, they're also doing habitat restoration during those projects as well.
And Monica Makehill, you're the founder and director of the Monarch Butterfly and Pollinator Festival, which is coming up this week. We're going to talk more about that in a second. But first, about what the city is doing. Tell me what you think about that.
Well, I think we've made great strides, but I'd also just like to point out, you know, this is a huge task that requires involvement from the community, and I think we've been very responsive as a community to this challenge. And also just to point out, you asked what the requirements were. One of the requirements of the Mayor's Monarch Challenge was to have a festival, which is why we have our festival. And another challenge was to have a community-wide pollinator gardening initiative, which we launched at the Texas Butterfly Ranch. And for last year, during our tricentennial year, we challenged the community to plant 300 pollinator gardens for San Antonio's 300th birthday. And by the end of the year, I think we had 340 gardens. And we're actually pushing that this year to do 500 gardens by 2020. So the community has responded. We don't have pollinator police to go check these gardens. I mean, we feel like people make a commitment. They sign up. They give us their address. And we've mapped it all out on my website at texasbutterflyranch.com. But I feel like the city has been very supportive. But really, it's the community that's going to have to take the lead on this. I mean, most of the land in this community is owned by private individuals. We all have gardens. Many people have gardens and yards. Even people with a terrace can have a pollinator pocket prairie on their porch with a whiskey barrel or a large pot. I mean, there's a lot of things you can do to increase, you know, resources for insect and other pollinators.
Rebecca Quinones-Pinon with the National Wildlife Federation. How do you see San Antonio's commitment?
Well, David, they have become one of our greatest examples, together with the 4 other cities in Texas who are also champion cities, because they have committed to the National Wildlife Federation's Mayor's Monarch Pledge. The total of actions, as you were saying, is not an easy task, and Monica already said it as well. It's a commitment to become a champion city. They have to commit to 24 actions, conservation actions, that the city has to implement. And San Antonio has become a very enthusiastic place. The community has welcomed the pledge. They appreciate the importance of conserving the monarch butterfly, and they have come up with very interesting ways to tackle these conservation actions. And Julia was mentioning the Alamo Area Monarch Collaborative, which is this amazing collaborative group integrated by different organizations, state agencies, individuals who are passionate about the monarch butterfly, and they created a monarch conservation plan for the city. It took them about a couple of years to implement the conservation efforts on that plan, but they align with those action items that are listed in the Mayor's Monarch Pledge.
Okay, let's go to the phone lines, 210-614-8980 with L.A. L.A., welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. This is more of a comment and a question at the same time. One year I was driving from San Antonio to Corpus Christi, and it was a very heavy migration that year. By the time I got to Corpus, I had over 100 splats of dead butterflies on my car. When you think about that, the number of cars that are driving around and killing butterflies, that's an astounding number. Now, I can't imagine anything can be done, but I have to wonder, is there anything that can be done about killing butterflies when you're driving around?
Interesting. L.A., thank you for that. Rebecca Quinones-Pignon, butterflies have a lot of natural predators. Are cars one of them?
It is, unfortunately. There are several studies that have been released, scientific studies lately in the last 2 years regarding the roadkill of monarchs. And even though we feel like that could be a large contribution to the decrease of the population, the study indicated that there is a small portion of monarchs that are killed by in the highways. We are working, for instance, here in Texas with TxDOT to find ways to decrease those numbers, and definitely one of the ways to do it is increasing the monarch habitats along the roadsides. It sounds like it's kind of counteractive, because many people would be thinking that we are attracting the monarchs to the highways. But what we're trying to do is, once more, is increase the population. And the monarch butterfly has its own sense of survival, and that's one of the reasons why each female is able to lay hundreds of eggs at once, because they know, the species know, that a large portion of those eggs won't make it to adults, or they won't make it all the way to the overwintering grounds. So we are definitely working on trying to overcome those issues with the roadkill. But one ironic part is that the monarch butterfly migration pathway aligns with with I-35, which it makes things extremely complicated. When they get to Mexico, something really neat happens. The highways are not as busy and complicated as they are here in the U.S. And in some towns, what they have done is that during the migration of the monarch butterfly, they have requested that cars have to slow down, which is possible, right? But unfortunately, here in the U.S., it'll be impossible to ask the cars to slow down in I-35.
Yeah, that would be a tough ask. Milkweed, we've been talking about milkweed a lot here, so I really want to try and just help people understand. Monica, can you tell me about why is milkweed so important, and if I want to plant some, where do I get some?
Well, milkweed is the host plant to the monarch butterfly. It's interesting when you talk to people about butterfly gardens, they always think of the flowers, but it's just as important because the flowers provide the nectar which the butterflies feed on in the adult stage of their life. But in the caterpillar stage, they eat the leaves of milkweed. And when they eat these leaves, there's particular toxins and chemicals in the milkweed called cardiac glycosides, which are actually a poison and taste very bitter. And these toxins express themselves in the bright orange and black coloration of the butterfly. And in nature, when you have bright colors, orange and black, red and black, it signals to predators that you're not tasty. And so that bright coloring, tells birds, hey man, watch out, I don't taste good. And there's a really famous experiment and photograph called the barfing blue jay photo that one scientist took where he put a blue jay on a pedestal and Dr. Lincoln Brower fed the blue jay a monarch butterfly, and within 5 minutes, I believe, he started retching. And so we learned that the butterflies don't taste good. So it's possible that a bird might taste a monarch once, but then once they taste how bad it tastes, they'll never do it again. And I like to think that one of the reasons that monarch butterflies fly the way they do in this kind of dreamy flight pattern where they just take their time and waft and glide is because they know that they're not going to be chased by predators. You'll see other butterflies like sulfurs, the yellow butterflies who skitter around and fly really quickly, and they're trying to evade predators by flying very jaggedy and very unpredictably. So the milkweed is really important. You've got to have, we like to say, milkweed in the spring when the monarchs are migrating north. We want to have milkweed available to them. You know, in the hill country, we have antelope horns milkweed. We have swamp milkweed. In San Antonio, we have tropical milkweed, which is technically not native here and can be controversial, but it's very available, and it's the monarch's preferred host plant. As you move north, you get more different kinds of milkweed. I believe there's over 100 species of milkweed, and there's different ones appropriate to different soil types and ecotypes depending on your location, how much moisture you have and all of that. But milkweed in the spring, nectar plants in the fall when they're coming back south, their goal is to fuel up and build their fat deposits because they're going to be spending all winter in the mountains of Mexico, and they need a lot of fat on their bodies to sort of get them through the winter. There's not a lot to eat that time of year in Mexico. They'll wake up from their slumbers and go get some water possibly on the dew or maybe a stream, but then they go back in the evening and just wait it out. So milkweed in the spring, nectar plants in the fall.
And milkweed is not typically something that you would find in the little seed counter at the big box store.
You could find some milkweed there, possibly. Honestly, I don't know the answer to that. But, I mean, there's native plant marketers like Native American Seed and Junction or...
If I go to your festival, am I going to find milkweed?
I think we have a lot of, we're going to have some native milkweeds available, which are very hard to find. I'm actually going to be selling some Texana milkweed. Texas has its own milkweed called Asclepias Texana. It's very difficult to find. But milkweeds are also very difficult to grow. A lot of them are very persnickety and, you know, like particular soil conditions.
I thought it was a weed.
Well, a weed is just a plant in the wrong spot. That's what we like to say in master gardener circles, so...
Yeah, but it's also, indestructible when it comes to, like, you don't want it to be in your garden. But when you do want it, it doesn't want to grow.
That's right.
Okay, so so where do I go for this festival that you're having, the Monarch Butterfly Pollinator Festival?
Well, it's actually a week. It's turned into a week-long event, and it actually starts on Saturday. There's going to be several workshops and things going on at the Botanical Gardens. We have all kinds of pollinator gardening workshops. There's a rain gardening workshop. We have Rebecca is actually leading a workshop in Spanish, in Espanol, for Spanish language teachers. And one of the things we try to do is reach the community and young people and children through teachers. And so we train teachers to use monarchs in the classroom as a teaching tool. It's an excellent way to teach metamorphosis and science and lessons about the ecosystem.
All right, so we'll talk more about some of the individual seminars and events you're going to be having at the festival, but we also have a link of that on our website at tpr.org, and you can find out more about the local pollinator monarch butterfly festival. We'll talk about other pollinators, about climate change, and about the incredible magical life of these butterflies when we come back from the break. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Lauren Terrazas, producer here at Texas Public Radio. TPR has continued to be at the front lines of some of the most pressing issues affecting our community. From the August mass shootings in West Texas, to Yo-Yo Ma taking his Bach project to the U.S.-Mexico border in Laredo, TPR was there. Our team works tirelessly around the clock, 7 days a week, all year long. But it wouldn't be possible without the support from you, our listeners. Help sustain your local member station, and TPR will continue bringing you real and reliable news that you turn to on a daily basis. You can make your pledge of support online at tpr.org. Thank you.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. You can kind of feel the change in the air. We're no longer, when you walk outside, walking on the surface of the sun. It has become almost tolerable outside, and that means the weather is changing and the butterflies are coming, the monarch butterflies. This is an important funnel point for the monarchs and their multi-generational migration pattern from the upper part of North America down into the mountains of Michoacán in Mexico. And San Antonio has an important role to play for them to make that journey safely. And how do we do that? And how can you help? The number is 210-614-8980. We're talking about that today on The Source. Rebecca Quiñones-Piñon, you're with the National Wildlife Federation. Can you tell me, paint me a picture, what's it like to be in the mountains with all the monarch butterflies migrating there?
You just made me smile. Just putting that picture in my mind. Well, it's a magical experience, full of great emotions, and definitely when you are involved in wildlife conservation, especially focused on conserving, protecting the monarch butterfly, definitely going to the mountains to see the monarchs spending their winter there, it's just totally magical. The forest, it's there are cold temperatures there. It's not like they go to extremely warm temperatures to overwinter. It's located in the highlands. That area, it's a pine oyamel mixed forest. And the monarchs use mostly the oyamel, which is a fir tree, and practically endemic to that area. A very small forest located between Michoacán and the state of Mexico. And several years ago, Catalina Trail, who was one of was part of the people who discovered the overwintering grounds, described the sound of the monarchs when they are flipping their wings in the overwintering grounds as a symphony, which I totally agree with her. The monarchs are active normally during the afternoons when it starts warming up. They seek for some nectar and water, and then they start gathering again and creating these beautiful orange and black clusters in the branches of the oyamel trees in the evenings. And what happens, it's quite interesting because what they are doing is creating this amazing microclimate that keeps them warm at night, and also they protect themselves from predators. So it's an amazing picture. The forest, besides having these amazing fir and pine trees, has a gorgeous overstory with many nectars. And we have reports of some milkweeds as well in the site. So it's an amazing journey to be there and witness how the monarchs are capable to reach that specific site, spend the winter, and then get ready to migrate back north at the end of February, March.
So not everyone can go and visit this location. We want, tourism can be a negative, have a negative impact on that. So, but it does make me happy to know that this type of place still kind of exists in the world, and the photos are incredible. The number to call in, 210-614-8980. If you want to talk about monarch butterflies, if you have an experience, a butterfly close encounter, we want to hear about it. And what are you willing to do to help keep butterflies safe here in San Antonio? Let's go to the phone lines with Robin. Robin, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. I have Asclepias crevassea in my yard, and I had lots of monarch caterpillars on it in the spring. And they, in fact, they defoliated completely my plants. Well, I was looking for chrysalises after that, and I never saw one chrysalis anywhere in my garden. And I wondered, what do you think happened?
Robin, thank you for that and comment and question. Let me go over to Monica. Do you have any ideas?
Well, typically when the monarchs are going to make their chrysalis, especially if the plant is defoliated, they will leave the plant. I think my understanding is they can, you know, crawl or creep 30 feet away. And I raise butterflies in my kitchen. My husband's very patient with me on that. And I'll have a caterpillar on the counter, and then we'll find it, you know, under the eave of the curtain 20 feet away, because they want to get away from that defoliated plant, because that's considered a target, because there's no leaves protecting it. And if they make the chrysalis, that's when they're very vulnerable, because they can't move. Wherever they make that chrysalis, they're going to be there for 10 days to 14 days. So the other possibility is mice eat those chrysalis, I've heard, and they could have maybe not made it to the chrysalis stage. They could have been eaten by, could have had disease. There's all kinds of things that can happen, but it's not unusual for the monarch caterpillars to leave the plant and go find a safe place to make their chrysalis. If you want to see the chrysalis and you want to see it, the whole thing hatch, we recommend you get a caterpillar condo, which is basically a cage pop-up laundry hamper cage, and you can put them in there when they get late in the stage, and they'll make the chrysalis inside the little net cage, and then you can watch the whole thing. It's really fun.
So this story about the multi-generational migration, and somehow they're programmed in their DNA, they know what to do and make that long journey. But and while that's incredible, but it also shows us that they're not they're not going to be adapt very quickly, and so climate change is going to be a major challenge for this type of species. So let me first go to Julia Murphy with the San Antonio Office of Sustainability, and our sustainability plan. What does it have to do with what we're talking about?
Great question. So one of my favorite parts of our new Climate Action and Adaptation Plan, which isn't adopted yet but is going before City Council next week, includes mitigation strategies specifically around promoting biodiversity and healthy ecosystems. So within that set of strategies, we lay out what we need to do to protect and enhance these life forms that give us all quality of life and provide so much more in the way of water conservation, land conservation, mitigating the urban heat island, which is going to be a very important thing for us. As we know, our climate is warming in South Texas. It's going to get even hotter for longer, I should say, and that's projected to do so. So the fact that we have built in natural systems into how we're going to mitigate for climate change is a giant leap forward. It's recognizing that these species do contribute in a major way.
And creating more green spaces that will have this type of biodiversity.
Absolutely.
Avoid monoculture.
Exactly. So yeah, native species are here for a reason. They're also water tolerant. So in addition to just helping everyone out, people can also save money on their water bills, their energy bills, et cetera. And there's some great programs out there right now through the utility companies to help people achieve that in their own yards.
Let's go to the phones with Denise. And Denise, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on there.
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, you sound great.
Okay, great. Well, I live in Fair Oaks Ranch in Burney, and I think it was back in 2009 we had thousands of monarch butterflies in our backyard nesting on the large oak trees behind my house. And we have we're on a large on a green belt with Cibolo Creek, and there's some indigenous plants and flowers, and It was such a beautiful sight. I wish I had taken pictures.
But I'm sure that experience, you really probably felt transformed, it was one of these incredible things.
It was beautiful. And we thought every year it was our first year or second year there. And I said, well, they probably come through here every year. And we wait for them every October, but they haven't been back.
All right, Denise, thank you for that. So, Monica, is it because, unpredictable, or is it the population is shrinking? Why wouldn't they come back again?
I mean, it could be a lot of things. Generally, they do look for places near, it seems like, streams and water. It depends. It's like the ecosystem for them to roost in the evenings. It's protected, protected from wind. Hopefully, there's nectar nearby. There's a tall tree that they can, gather in. So there's no set rules about it. It could depend on the wind was blowing that day, and as the sun was setting, they had to drop down, and that was just a lucky day. But obviously, planting native plants and having nectar nearby is very advantageous, as is having water and large trees.
Yeah, I had an experience like that when I was on the Riverwalk near King William, back there, and there's a lot of nectar plants. People have their active gardens. There's a water supply, and it was at a day like today when it was just incredibly thick with butterflies.
Yeah,
something that you'll remember that forever.
You bet. And you're going to see this year with the sort of parched situation in Texas with all the lack of rain that we've had. You're going to see the monarchs congregate in places where there's rivers and streams. They're going to gravitate to that most likely.
All right, we're going to take another break, and our phone lines are open. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. We'll talk more about some of the events that are coming up at the Monarch Butterfly and Pollinator Festival that will be kicking off on Saturday and will last a week. Also, we want to hear your butterfly memories. The number is 210-614-8980, or any questions and comments you might have. If you've tried to grow the milkweed, how did that work out for you? Did you see the caterpillars come by? 210-614-8980. The source continues after this.
Shea Serrano's love of movies began with his knucklehead friends on the southwest side of San Antonio.
I don't know if you're 13, 14, 15 years old, you started watching stuff like Boys in the Hood and Menace to Society or Blood In, Blood Out, Bloodsport and kickboxer fighting movies.
Serrano joins us on Fronteras to talk about his new book, Movies and Other Things. I'm Norma Martinez. Download Fronteras wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We've got climate change, we've got pesticides, we've got the loss of habitat or the fragmentation of habitat, all sorts of challenges in the world for butterflies and other pollinators, and we need these species. They're beautiful, they're inspiring, but also these guys do a lot of good work that we need for the world. So how can we help them help us? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980 as we talk about butterflies. Let's go to Joey. Hey, Joey, welcome to The Source. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hello, how are you doing? This was a part of a comment and a question. I just recently came back from Chicago, and Chicago's actually done quite a good job of setting up some botanicals along their Millennium Park. Amongst my pictures of buildings and landmarks, there's nestled some beautiful pictures of butterflies. How far north do they come when migrating south? That was mainly my question, but also the comment along with that.
Okay, thank you for that, Joey. So, Monica, you can talk about their migration pattern and about the tagging of the butterflies.
Well, in answer to your question, Joey, they migrate all the way to Canada. They've had monarchs in Ontario, and we got a lot of reports in the last month of the monarchs leaving Ontario, and there's a lot of crazy lists where people that are, we call it the monarchy of just follow, every movement of the butterflies, and we know where the leading edge is, and there's incredible citizen science tools and resources, specifically Journey North, which if you go to journeynorth.org, there's a live map that shows you where the monarchs are, where the leading edge is, where the roosts are, where the live butterflies, where the chrysalises are being spotted. Also, the Monarch Watch at the University of Kansas is a program that I've been very involved in and that we'll be utilizing at our festival on October 20th at the Pearl, as we tag the butterflies with a little sticker that has a number on it that allows us to recover that butterfly possibly in Michoacan. And we tag a couple hundred butterflies at our festival every year. Last year, we had three of our butterflies recovered on the forest floor in Mexico, and the year before that, we had five. So it's just a very magical thing, and I think it sort of speaks to San Antonio's unique position and aptitude for this phenomenon, is that we are in the heart of the Texas funnel. We have an incredible relationship with Mexico, and this butterfly is a charismatic species that sort of underscores all of that and allows us to look at the complex issues like climate change and other things and immigration and migration policies through the lens of that monarch butterfly while achieving so much greatness in the course of doing that.
And Rebecca Quiñones-Piñon, there's Mariposas Sin Fronteras, which is Butterflies Without Borders. That is an important concept to think about. The butterflies don't, you know, they don't know about borders, but, you know, the border wall is actually a role, is another challenge for the butterflies.
Well, it is due to the habitat fragmentation, especially. We know that habitat fragmentation causes a lot of issues, not only for the monarch butterfly, but for many other wildlife species, including many migratory birds. And that's the reason why we need to come on board and make sure that we create or restore native habitat. And a beauty is that there are studies that have demonstrated that even the small gardens within urban areas are definitely a huge help for monarchs, all pollinators, and many migratory birds. So that's why we work so hard also with the main cities in Texas to ensure that they increase their native habitats as demonstration gardens in their parks and backyard habitats, where they will provide food, shelter, water, and a place to raise their young, the species to raise their young. So we try to promote that and make sure that that's something that the urban areas increase over time.
Sure. If you're a backyard gardener and you've got the broccoli going, let a couple of broccoli go to flower, because that'll certainly bring out the butterflies. Let me go to Mary on the phones. Mary, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, I just wanted to let your listeners know that as a part of the Monarch Festival, the Monarch Ultra Runners are running from Canada, the United States, to Michoacan, Mexico, tracing the route of the monarch butterfly, and they're running to raise awareness and education for the monarchs.
Mary, thank you for that. And is that part of the festival, Monica?
They will actually be moving through San Antonio on October 17th, and we're going to have a little reception that Mary has organized for them at the Pearl at Broadway and Pearl Parkway at 10 o'clock on Thursday, October 17th. So if anybody wants to come out and cheer those guys on, that'd be a great thing to do.
So tell me again, it sounds like a long run, okay?
Well, it's a relay. It's not one person, is my understanding. It's a team of people that are, you know, I think they take 50 kilometers a day or something like that.
But then again, that's what everyone needs to do their part.
Exactly.
All right.
And it replicates the journey of the monarch butterfly as well.
Let's go to Sarah on the phones. Hi, Sarah. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. I know, like, 17 years ago, my father's now since passed. I live in the Texas Hill Country in Center Point. We were by the river, and thousands of monarchs. Like, I have pictures. It was just amazing, magical. I've wanted my kids to experience the same thing, and it hasn't happened again. Like, I haven't seen that number again. How much has this number actually declined?
Right, sir. So we know the numbers have gone down quite a bit for the last 20 years. Monica, do you know, like, what percentage?
Well, I mean, there's different ways to look at it. I mean, when the monarch was submitted to be considered for listing as threatened under the Endangered Species Act, in, I believe it was in 2014, there was a 90% drop from the peak. And it has definitely, you know, eroded every year, gotten less and less. But we've had a couple of rebound years, and this is a rebound year too, as Rebecca pointed out. So absolutely the climate's changing, absolutely the situation's changing. And we don't know if the monarch migration as a phenomenon will continue, because as climate change changes the temperature and the ecosystems, and milkweed might be available more year-round, there may not be a reason for monarch butterflies to migrate anymore if they can get what they need locally. And we're already seeing that, for example, in Houston, and even here in San Antonio, we've had local communities of monarch butterflies that don't leave here. They stay here. They live their entire lives out here. And so that's another thing to consider that could happen.
Let's go to George on the phones. George, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you doing? Okay. Well, one of my concerns is that presently a lot of the nurseries here in town sell invasive species that, for all practical purposes, might as well be plastic, because they're, you know, pollinators and butterflies don't even recognize what they are. A good example is, and this has been the case for many, many years, you can go by recognition.
Okay.
Kitty Park used to be all invasive. I think, could Monica speak to that?
All right, George, thank you for the call. We missed some of that. But
I couldn't hear what you were saying in terms of what species you're referring to. You kind of broke up there. But, I mean, there's no doubt that there's a lot of inappropriate plants being sold. And one of the issues is that people want colorful stuff that may or may not be appropriate to the local climate. And, frankly, grass and turf is one of our worst enemies to, like, dump, you know, thousands of pounds of fertilizer onto your lawn and pay someone to come mow it and blow it every month and dump all the water that we spend every summer trying to keep our grass green. And for what? It doesn't do anything for the environment. I mean, it might hold the soil in place, but there's so many other options that you can explore. And, you know, I encourage you to come to those people who would like to learn, to come to some of our gardening workshops to learn about how you can make a beautiful lawn. It's not a lawn. It's actually a garden. It's a place that provides ecosystem services to the community of wildlife and we as people.
And very quickly, Rebecca Quiñones-Piñon, if you could tell us about how San Antonio is being seen as a leader in supporting monarchs. Very quickly, in a minute.
Okay. San Antonio, once more, become a champion. They are fulfilling 24 conservation actions on the plan, and one of the main things that they have focused on is on the creation of monarch and all pollinators habitat within the urban area. They have worked as well on seeing the milkweed not as a noxious species, but also including it as an important species that can be planted. We work with mowing seasons to make sure that they leave the milkweed and at the right time. So I will encourage everyone to look at the Alamo Area Monarch Collaborative and learn more about all the efforts that San Antonio has done. The festival is a great way to outreach and educate the public.
Yeah, so let me get Monica to tell us more about the festival. Lots of events during the festival, pollinator practices. We hear about gardening workshops. We have a butterfly walk. What's the butterfly walk?
A butterfly walk will be a tour of along at Confluence Park, where I'm not sure who will be leading it, but someone will be pointing at native plants and what their role in the ecosystem is. Confluence Park has a fantastic larval garden. The larva stage is the caterpillar stage of the butterfly's life cycle. And they planted specific plants that are host plants to different kinds of butterflies, so that's kind of a really unusual approach, and I encourage everyone to go to that. It's on, I believe it's on Saturday, next Saturday, a week from Saturday at 1 o'clock at Confluence Park, and it's free.
Right, so we have events happening at the Confluence Park, also at the San Antonio Botanical Garden, UTSA main campus. This is sort of spread out.
It's totally spread out. Yeah, we've tried to expand the festival beyond just downtown area this year. And the other thing that we've really tried hard to do is to expand the charisma of the monarch butterfly beyond the species, Danaus plexippus, which is the monarch. You know, we don't want to be speciesist people.
You're right.
bats and hummingbirds and bees.
And the bees. And we're for sure, because we need these guys. I want to thank all of y'all for coming on today and helping us understand what's happening with our butterflies, Monica Makel with the Monarch Butterfly and Pollinator Festival, Julia Murphy with the San Antonio Office of Sustainability, Rebecca Quinones-Pignon with the National Wildlife Federation. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Ken Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by me, Ruben Garcia, and Jan Rospiedad. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.